Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that's good. It's pretty good right now. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, which is good. I mean, we can use the rain, so we're looking forward to that.
There we go. Thank you, Cass, for pointing that out. I had muted my audio earlier. You can hear me, but nobody else could, but that's fine. So, perfect. Somebody pointed that out to me. Thank you for...
That's good.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like I said, Brian Freeman's was my first one, and we didn't really have any, there was no following at that point in time. Nobody told me that nobody could hear us either. So luckily he came back and we did have another interview with that one. So that was nice. Again, thank you to Cass for pointing that out. And thanks for to Bad Wolf there for following. Appreciate it. So before I bring Martha here on screen, I'm just going to do, there's usually a little intro. We're skipping that today. I'm going to redo it. It's a bunch of waste of time. But as Bad Wolf made a nice segue there, in case you like listening to author interviews and want to follow, that's mainly what I do on here. Hit the little follow button there down on the bottom of Twitch, and that'll let you know when the next one's coming up. Also, griftkin.com. I don't have anything scheduled right now. I do have some people coming in the pipeline, hopefully. But in case something happens, I don't want to throw any names out there because I don't want it. You know, it's, things happen. It's not always their fault. I've had to cancel before. Authors have had to cancel before. Life happens. And we're not waiting for the starting soon. So I'm skipping to the screen. Here we go. Aha, let me do that. I don't need to see that part anymore. Make us all full screen now. Perfect. It's been a month or two since I did this. Getting rusty. All right. Well, I want to first of all, thank you for Martha for getting back to me, who's got a much nicer background than I've got going here. But I'm sharing with my wife, who's has started her quilting there. So that's why I can't move that stuff. It's everything's where she wants it. So, you know, gotta leave that hanging out here. Anybody who hasn't watched before, I'm Edward, aka Griftkin, because this is Twitch and you have to have a username. So, hey, there you go. As we were talking, weather's changing down there in Texas, hopefully getting a little rain. Here in Omaha, it's got no idea what it's doing. It was like 67 when I got up this morning, and that was the high for today. I think it's down to like 30 something now, which is not the right direction to go during the middle of the day. But yeah. Nobody's here for the weather. So obviously, if you're on here, you're here to listen to Martha Wells talk. Don't have a lot of background. I do know you have a PA in, I said PA. You have a BA.
I wish I had a PA.
In anthropology, is that correct? And of course, you're hanging out down there in Texas. We won't get any more specific than that. But I have to say, I'm just going to throw this out there. I find it kind of funny that I discovered you with Murderbot. Because anybody who knows me is I'm very big into fantasy with a little bit of sci-fi. And Murderbot is nowhere near your first series.
No.
No. But I have, for a guy who's not huge on sci-fi fantasy, I've absolutely fallen in love with this idiot you've got running around as a main character. And I don't think he would be offended at that. Very self-deprecating robot. He has no qualms talking about his shortcomings. So let me ask you this. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of background. If you read your bio, you basically, you know, came out of the womb with a quill and inkwell. Writing's your story. So what is the background? What got you in? I know you have to answer this on everyone, but just in case there's somebody new who doesn't know this, what got you into writing? And at what point did you decide, you know, I may not be half bad at this?
I I'm not entirely sure. I always read a lot, and we had a lot of books in our house. And I know that's usually a pretty big thing for people who become writers. It may just be having been a lonely kid and kind of needing to make your own fun. I did a lot of, I guess it was probably early fan fiction when I was still really young, watching. We had back when you only had like five channels. We had an independent that would show monster movies and science fiction shows, the early Irwin Allen shows and things like that, like Land of the Giants and see and the I was it Sequest or I can't remember the one where they're going around the they're in the submarine.
Sounds right.
Yeah, it was called the Sea View, and I can't remember the name of the show, but anyway. And I really was into the Godzilla. There was a ton of Godzilla movies at that time and monster movies. And there was a cartoon series about Godzilla or King Kong, where he was their friend and everything. And I really loved that. And I would draw these big maps of Monster Island that would cover like most of our living room floor, and just kind of getting into stuff like that. And I also, my mother was a big Irma Bombeck fan, and she was a columnist, newspaper columnist, and humor writer, and she did a lot of had her columns put into these books, and one of them was with Bill Keane, who was a cartoonist at that time, and he did Family Circle, and I read that in the newspaper, and so I kind of glommed onto those books because of that. And she wrote a lot about not only being kind of a suburban housewife, but about also being a writer. And I think that was probably my first inkling that you could, a real person and a woman could actually be a writer, and that the people who wrote the books in the library and the bookstore were actually real people who did that as jobs. And so I kind of always wanted to do it. I didn't know if there was much chance that I could. And when I went to college at Texas A&M University. And I actually went there because they had a science fiction and fantasy committee, a student committee that did programs, and they did a science fiction convention. I'd been to one science fiction convention at that point. I'd gone to ArmadilloCon in Austin with a friend, and we got my parents to take us. It was a very teeny convention at that time, teeny tiny, but I had a great time. And so I wanted to go, I wanted to do that more. And having a student convention at the university seemed the best way to do that. And I ended up becoming a member of the committee and working on the convention and meeting a lot of writers, and took a writer's workshop with Stephen Gould, who wrote the Jumper books, and just started trying to write and sending out short stories that were, turned down because it wasn't very good. And then finally, after, I guess I was about, yeah, I was a I think I was about 26 when I wrote my first novel, and it ended up sell after a while, ended up selling to Tor Books and came out in 1993.
Yeah, I have, do have to say, I remember those times you talk about having the five channels. I remember to get that fifth channel, you had to switch to the UHF.
Yes, and
But
it was
yeah,
fuzzy. You could hardly see it.
and everything. I totally remember this being a kid growing up in the 70s. The Saturday mornings, everything was either a Godzilla movie, or usually there's Godzilla movie, and then there was some sort of badly dubbed kung fu movie back to back. That seemed to be like the Saturday morning run way back in
Yeah,
the day.
or an alien invasion movie.
A
There was a
few of
lot
those
of
too.
yeah.
I also appreciated you talked about the fact that you started out doing the maps and stuff like that, and then you brought up Bill Keane, because I remember Family Circle, some of the funniest ones he did was were basically it was just a map.
Yes.
And you see like the route that the kids would take to try to do one simple process.
Yes.
But yeah, those were hilarious. And I remember my mom having all the Irma Bombeck stuff as well too. So yeah, I think we spent a good deal of time in the same generation there.
Yes.
So what gotcha, I saw your earlier stuff. Oh, that's the other thing I was going to ask you. I've looked at it. How do you pronounce, because of course I haven't actually, I need to get the audiobooks together, but was the one the Ilrien or
Yeah,
Ilrien?
just Ilrian.
Ilrien. Okay. Yeah, I kept looking at that, and of course, the downside too is sometimes you're looking at it and L's and capital I's in certain fonts. I'm like, I don't know which one I'm supposed to be reading here. But yeah, I'm really kind of surprised, like I said, that I did not discover you before Murderbot, because I was looking at some of the other books you've read. And by the way, I'm also going to talk about Sea Witch, by the way, which I loved. And a lot of
Salt
those
Witch.
Just Salt Witch. Sorry, yeah. Is it Salt yeah. Witch? Yes, Salt Witch. Salt Witch, Witch King. I had all my witches. I got all my witches in my back of my head there. But those were the type of books that I thought that I would have probably liked. Death of the Necromancer. That's totally that's the title that I would have read, and yet somehow I managed. I can't remember who got me started. Probably Rachel at the Bookworm got me started with Murderbot, and absolutely love these. I am, and Kindle will tell you this. I am 38% through book 6. I have not quite finished, but I was trying to get through the end of it. Couple questions about Murderbot. What made you decide on him as a character to be your protagonist?
Well, when I came up with the idea, it was going to be a short story with a sad ending. And I'd been writing fantasy up to that point, and I was actually finishing up the last book in the Books of the Raxura series, The Harbors of the Sun. And I got the idea for this person who was an enslaved security person, but had managed to free the head with like a governor module thing and had to manage to free himself, and but would have to reveal that to save these people they wanted to save. So that was obviously a science fiction idea. And it was obviously just a part human, a cyborg, part robot protagonist. AI was kind of the way to go with it. So it was just kind of, I didn't really have the character developed at that point. It was just like, this is what the character has to be to make this plot idea work. And then when I started writing, I don't usually write in first person either, but that just felt right. And starting it in for that viewpoint, I thought, and I just got, actually, the first scene I got was, the first thing I wrote was the scene with Dr. Mensa in the cubicle, when Dr. Mensa comes in and opens the cubicle door to talk to it. And wrote like, and I was actually still working on the draft of the other fantasy novel. I thought, well, I'm just going to get this scene out of my head, and then I'm going to write some notes and then go back to what I need to do. And I think I just wrote like 1,000 words just like that, which is not, because usually I'm a slow writer. So that's unusual for me. And the idea just grabbed me and I wanted to keep doing it. And so as soon as the day after I finished the book draft, I started back on what was going to become All Systems Red. And very quickly it went from a short story to this needs to be a novella. And I'm not sure what the ending is going to be, but it's not going to be sad. And I actually didn't know what the ending was going to be until I actually got there. I was kind of going back and forth on what would happen, whether Murderbot would go back to preservation with the rest, with the crew, or if it would, or something else would happen, how that would happen. And in the end, Murderbot's got to leave. So that's how that ended. I know some people at the time were upset about it because it was a sad ending, they thought, but it was the best one.
It was, but and I'll kind of liken it to the fact, I don't know if anybody's ever seen Rain Man, but I remember watching Rain Man at the movies, and that final scene, and this isn't a spoiler, that movie's been out for like 30 years now. But the final scene, you felt like Dustin Hoffman's character needed to say, I love you back to Tom Cruise. And you're so let down. But I also realized after that, it's like, no, that would have been the cheap ending. That would have been the what everybody mm-hmm. wanted ending. And I think that it was much more powerful not doing that. And I feel like where Murderbot is now, again, I think this has been out long enough. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to go into detail too much in book 6, just because I know that's the latest one. But anybody who's gotten this far knows he's back at least at the moment with them and all that. But there's a whole lot of change and development that happened to him that, without him leaving, this kind of ends up being book 2. And I don't think I don't think he'd be the same character.
No, it really, Murderbot needed to be on its own. If it had just gone back with them at that point, it would have been like trading up to better captors, basically. They would not have had the respect for it and the understanding of what its life and experience was like. And it would not have, I think it would have ended up leaving them anyway, because it would have felt trapped there.
I agree. It's funny. I think you have a lot of freedom, and that's not a bad thing, but you've got a lot of freedom with this character. The fact that He's so self-contained. He's so introverted. Trying to keep his family friendly. You use a different word for him, but he's a jerk sometimes. And he owns that, though. He understands that. He's never one of those things are like, how dare you call me that? And he's basically kind of like, yeah, that's fair. I mean, not in those words. Yeah. But I think the fact that we get to, I love the fact that you wrote this in first person, actually. I feel much more involved in this book where we're reading it and we're really invested in him. Any other book written from a different series like this, not that it would be bad, but it would be totally different. You know, all of a sudden, Mensa and Pin Lee and Rathi and all that, it becomes much more of another companion's novel, another, you know, group of friends. And with this one, like I said, the fact that we're learning how he reacts and the fact that to a certain extent you've humanized him a lot, but by the same token, you haven't gone full-fledged into that. He's still very self-acclaimed. He's not human. And it's not one of those things where he even necessarily wants to be human.
No. Most of Murderbot's interactions are with other machine intelligences. Most of its really deep relationships are with other machine intelligences.
Which I also loved. I think, you know, a different type of author might have done one of those things where, you know, he is this sentient bot or whatever you want to call it, and all the other stuff that he talked to would just be computers or programs and they would be lesser. But the fact that you give, for instance, even some of them, like, you know, just some of the ship bots and stuff like that, they have emotions. There's fear, there's panic, there's friendship, there's even if he considers them less programmed, he still kind of treats them as, you know, he's, as he said, especially in the sixth one, he's not a bot, but he's also not a human. He's a construct, so he doesn't fit into either one. But even when he thinks somebody's being stupid, especially humans, he still treats them with respect. And so I think he's a much more, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but you feel for him. He's kind of the underdog, even when he doesn't seem to lose. One thing I'm going to bring up, just because a lot of people are bringing it up in the chat, and I'll give a shout out to, and I hope I pronounce, because you know how usernames are, but both Murd and Cass have brought this up, and I think Crow to a certain extent too. And I think they bring up a good point, is you kind of read Murderbot however you want him to be. And I use the term him, but for instance, I read him as a male. I know people have read him as a female. Of course, as Murd pointed out, I don't want to be called a he. I'm not a sex bot. You know, he doesn't really have a gender. And Cass even asked if there was any, I don't know if it was in your plans or not, but was it even written as maybe sort of a trans character without ever actually having to go into that narrative?
I don't think so, because that's a trans character. That's a term for humans. Gotcha. And Murderbot is really not a human. It has no gender, or its gender is Murderbot, basically. It's
one of a kind.
It's they're basically non-binary, because even when the comfort bots are assigned a gender to look like, that's something imposed on them. And so really in their construction and the way they're basically the way they're created, they don't have any kind of gender. So yeah, I kind of really get away from, even though Murderbot does, I mean, have a lot of the same emotions and issues that humans do, I think you have to also remember it's not a human. And so it doesn't, those terms don't exactly apply. It might be having a lot of the same experiences because of its situation that they might have a lot in common with a trans person, and a trans person might identify very strongly with it, and maybe even vice versa. But that's a term for humans. So
understood. So getting back to some of its side characters, for lack of a better word, do you feel like, especially like, let's say the main group, even though they weren't in all of the books, but, you know, the Mensa, Pinley, Rathi, Gurathin, I hope I'm pronouncing that one correctly.
Yeah, that's fine.
That was the hardest one for me. I was like, I think I'm pronouncing this right. Did you create those characters to fill certain roles, or did you just start writing the characters and they became who they needed to be?
Basically, I just started writing them and they became who they needed to be. I knew, you know, I needed some characters who were going to be somewhat antagonistic and some who were going to be somewhat sympathetic at the beginning. And then I don't do a lot of outlining or planning in advance. I kind of like to discover the story the same way the reader would. So a lot of that just is very organic and everything kind of develops, you know, the plot, the characterization, everything all together.
I can hear. I don't think the story, as much as you love to hate him, I don't think the story goes as well without, for instance, Gurath in there as kind of that foil.
Yeah, you need characters that are antagonistic without being villains. When I work with beginning writers, that's one thing is people sometimes want to make their story, especially a adventure story, very black and white. And yeah, you need villains, but you also need people who are just antagonists who don't agree with the main character. And so you can generate that conflict without it being basically a question of good and evil or whatever, survival or whatever. Right. You can, it's people who are learning how to deal with each other and learning how to get along in groups are a lot more interesting than just, I think, a person on their own. And while Murderbot's a very solitary character, it always ends up, you know, having to deal with these situations and learn about new humans or new bots and kind of, and I think that provides a lot of opportunity for characterization all around.
I do have to say, especially in fantasy, which of course I've already admitted to you, I love, I think a lot of times though, there is that default where the tension has to come from the villain. So I appreciate the fact that there's a lot of story. It's a small book, don't get me wrong. Oh, by the way, Exit Strategy, that's the one I've got on me, mainly because my son has books 2 and 3, and I haven't gotten them back yet. Mm-hmm. Book four. Book five that's I read out of order for a book club. I don't usually read books out of order, but I had to read book 5 out of order. And 6, like I said, I just got started, and I can't show that to you because it's on my Kindle. Apologies all to the independent bookstores out there. Yes, I do occasionally buy stuff that's on a Kindle, but I've got the rest in hardcover, so eventually I'm going to get book 6 in hardcover, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, but Fugitive Telemetry actually comes before Network Effect. Let me get that in. Yeah.
How did I mess that up?
It was published out of order because I wrote them out of order.
I gotcha.
There was actually a scene in Network Effect, without spoilers, about a bit of the ways in where Murderbot is showing someone a video of something that happened on Preservation Station. And it was working with the Preservation Security first responder team. And after I finished Network Effect, I was really thinking about that scene, and it was Murderbot has a pretty good relationship with them at that point. And I wanted to show how that relationship evolved. I felt like there was a story there.
Gotcha.
And so Fugitive Telemetry is that story, basically.
That's making more sense now. Part of my confusion was, again, because I read Network Effect out of order. I read it a long time ago, so that's like the one I've had the least recent memory of. But yeah, that does make sense now that you say that, because I'm thinking, he seems to have just met them all in Fugitive Telemetry.
Yeah. So I wish there had put something on it that said, basically, this takes place before Network Effect. But it's too late now.
Yeah. You got to do that little 4.5 or thing that they do sometimes.
Yeah,
it's like a slightest of the air. All right. Perfect. By the way, just going to shout out to the stream chat here. Obviously, you've seen that I've passed along some of the stuff you guys have brought up. Anybody got any questions, feel free to throw them out there. That's the whole reason of doing this on Twitch instead of just making it a YouTube video, is so that it's not just me talking. You know, I want everybody to have a chance to ask anything that they want to ask as well. So I do have to say, and again, I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, but for a character that wasn't in the storyline very long, y'all pulled some heartstrings there with Mickey.
Yeah.
And you pulled Murderbot's heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah. And that's one of the things about, I think I benefit from not planning stuff out in advance, because the spontaneity, I mean, I would never, when I started the story and Mickey came in, I would never have thought Mickey would become that important to character and then that would happen in the end. So that kind of comes from just, I've heard that kind of writing described as a pantser or seat of the pants writer, but someone else called it like a discovery writer. And I think almost that fits better.
Nice. But let's see. Oh, one thing I wanted to bring up, because I didn't actually see it till now, a little behind on a couple of things, but I saw in a previous interview, at one point in time, there was a hint of a possibility of a TV series. Is there anything new on that front?
Yeah, I'm sort of not allowed to talk about it yet because I don't think they've done an official announcement. It's not super certain, but it's a lot closer at this point than it ever has been before.
It's less uncertain. Got it. That's what
it's much less uncertain, and it's very exciting. And I've got to talk about it a lot to the people who are doing it, and it's just been a lot of fun and excitement so far for me. It's a lot of work for them.
But if they're gonna do it though, they got to get it right. I think Murderbot is very beloved. I won't lie, if somebody asks me what my favorite book is, I'm still going to tell them Count of Monte Cristo day in and day out. I know that's classic. It's not supposed to be anybody's favorite, but look at this face. I'm not young. I remember that book came out in hardcover. No, I'm just kidding. No. But if you ask me what my favorite series is, I have to say Murderbot has eclipsed a few of the ones that have fallen along the wayside. I don't count trilogies as a series. I think to me, a series has to be a little bit longer than a trilogy. But yet, no offense to, Harry Dresden or whatever finally ended up of Rawl and all those guys over there on Wizard's First Rule. But yeah, Murderbot has passed them up as my current favorite series. It's my current favorite read. I mean, literally, if I had more time today, I was so busy at work, I'd probably be done with book six, too. With the possible possible exception of Network Protocol, I don't think any of these have taken me more than 2 days. That's not just because they're small books, but just because you keep the action going. There's no slowdown. Something's always happening. And I can only imagine, as he says, how slow humans are. The speed at which things happen in this book, humans can't blink. it's hard to put this down once you get started. It's a very... very good book.
Well, good, because they're very hard to write. So I'm glad people enjoy them.
Did you feel like sometimes when you write a novella versus a novel, some people think it's like, you know, it's only a couple hundred pages long. That's easy.
It's not really. I think it's long enough that you still have to have a complete story, and the timing of the pacing is different, is very, very different from a short story and very, very different from a novel. It's about the Murderbot books are a little bit, usually between 33,000, 36,000 words, and Network Effect is the exception because it's novel sized. It's 110,000. But that's, for me, that's about a third of a novel. And in a normal novel, that third is still setting up the story. I mean, the characters may be already moving into action and doing things and going places, but you're still setting up the plot in the first third. And it's the middle is completely different and the ending is completely different. So with the novella, it's just the whole pacing and the structure of how you do it, particularly with an adventure, is just completely different. And it kind of takes, it usually takes me about 3 to 4 months to do them. All Systems Red went together pretty quickly, but it's not as complicated as the later books. And usually what I'll do is I'll write about, probably with Artificial Condition, I wrote about 20,000 words and then ended up ditching most of that and going back and starting from the beginning and then kind of salvaging bits and pieces out of it. But that's pretty much what I do with all of them. Network Effect was the same way, except it took, I think, probably 15 months to write, because probably the first year was just on, it probably took me a year to get to the first 50,000 words of actual usable draft. And a lot of that is, the logistics are very complicated for a Murderbot book, since Murderbot's point of view kind of encompasses, if whatever systems and other things you have in the setting, Murderbot is usually going to be able to get access to. So in any action scene, you have to take into account what camera views it can use to see things and what information it can get from these different systems that are active, and how it can be trashing its opponent by affecting these other systems and what it's going to be trying to do. And, you know, I could do something where, oh, we're going to go someplace and it doesn't have any of that. And actually, I played with that in the most recent one that I just finished this past year that hasn't come out yet. But it's kind of unfair to, you know, unfair to the reader to say, oh, well, for some reason, they can't see all this right now, just to make it easier for me to write an action scene. So I have to write these very complicated scenes where I'm writing in first person, but the point of view, but there might be 7 or 8 points of view that have to be taken into account. Gotcha. So there's a lot of writing and rewriting and everything.
That was actually the thing I was going to ask you too. You know, obviously novels are one thing. Short stories, I think short stories sometimes, to be good, they actually have to, you still have to have talent. But I think sometimes they're a little bit easier to write because you're just trying to put this little, you've got this hard beginning, hard end, and you're just doing a short little thing. But I feel like novellas, and you could tell me, I haven't written one. This is no personal experience. But I just feel like, do you find with your novellas, there's so much more on the quote unquote cutting room floor? Is the editing so much more because you're trying to get to that specific spot?
Yeah, with the novellas, it's for most of the ones I've done, I did 4 Raxura novellas. And actually, those were a bit easier to do. Probably because I'd already set up so much of the series by that point that it was after I'd done the first 3 novels. So, and I really had more clear ideas of what the story was going to be when I started those. Except for one, there was one I had to kind of write and rewrite because I realized about midway through, it was going to be too short, and I needed to basically turn up the plot complication a little bit. I actually find short stories much harder to write. I don't write very many of them because it's just the world building and the way it has to fit in, and the way everything has to fit in 7,000 words. I'm not very good at that. It's very difficult for me. Usually I have to get, and I don't, short story ideas don't come as readily to me as other ideas. So they're much, much harder, and they take a long time. Like The Salt Witch you brought up, that took me a year to write from the, wow, the initial idea to finally, took me forever to get the voice. And then going back to it over and over again through the course of a year, I finally finished it.
I don't know why I sound surprised, considering the only thing I've ever written is poetry. And even after all of these years, I've only got one that I really like. So, you know, I can imagine there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of tweaking to get it to where you want it to be.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just like some people are just have a talent that is more inclined to short stories. And some people can do both novels and long works and short works without, you know, changing back and forth without any problem. And I'm not like that. I'm mostly long stuff and very, very occasionally a short story.
Don't want to get too far in because I don't want to forget all of the wow, audience, words happened. I promise I do this quite often. I know how to speak English. Crow Turtle, is that the one? Yep. Wanted to know, how would you describe the political economic system of preservation?
Of preservation? It's mostly based on almost a group economy. I'm not sure exactly what you would call it, because it was based on the ship they came there in. They came from this other colony that had basically collapsed and were rescued by these people that didn't have to do it, but did it because it was the right thing to do. And so on the shipboard, you have these resources and they're, everyone's treated as basically equal. You have enough resources for what you need, you know, for your medical or your food and your shelter, your communication. And so when they got to the planet, they decided to keep that system. And they do it basically, a lot of their political stuff is, it's more like probably a social democracy where you have your administrators are elected by consensus from everyone. Everyone gets a vote. There's no issues with voting rights. It's everybody, basically. Everyone gets a certain amount of their supplies that they need, your food, your medical, your communication, your education, that kind of thing. Everybody who can does something to contribute to the whole. They do have some money systems and more like a barter system for on the planet. And then their station that they trade with, that trades with other the other political entities that they have contact with, uses a somewhat of a money system to be able to interact with them. So yeah, I'm not really sure what you would call that. It's what exactly, I think it borrows from several different political systems. So,
and then Tora just had a side question here. I hope I pronounced that right. If you know, is there any hope of getting the short stories included in audio format at this point? I'd give a lot to hear Kevin R. Free reading them as well.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm trying to think because some of my fantasy short stories are actually in audio form or sold. I can't remember if that's come out yet. I don't think it has. But I don't know about the Murderbot ones. It seems like something we would do, but right now there's like one or two, I think. There's the Mensa story, and then there's the really short one that was in Wired magazine. And actually, Subterranean Press is going to print the original longer version of that, which is still only, it's a very tiny story. I think it's 1,500 words. And is there another one? I don't think so. So yeah, it would be something to think about. Maybe they can be tacked on to, you know, another novella coming up, but as in the audiobook version. But
yeah, it's always one of those things where, and I think we see this not necessarily totally, but more in the sci-fi, fantasy, and maybe even horror realm, where you get a lot of these quote unquote side stories that aren't necessarily in book form anywhere. So which drives some of us completists crazy. Just throwing that out there, but that's a me problem, not a you problem. But I've got a few authors where they've written like at least one story somewhere that's in a magazine I can't get my hands on anymore. And I'm like, no, I need to read that.
Yeah, I really love the Rivers of London series by Ben Aronovich. And there's several short stories that are written for different, like I think Waterstones gets a special short story in their edition or whatever, that kind of thing. And it's hard to find. Sometimes he puts them on his blog, I think. And sometimes there's like, they show up, it just does like an audiobook download. But yeah, it's frustrating. You're like, I want more and I know they're out there, but I can't get them.
I swear that's probably my hardest problem doing stuff like this, is especially when I get an author who, like for instance with Murderbot, I am almost done reading the series. It's like, I really want you to write another one, but I have learned, and you can thank Patrick Rothfuss for this, at some point, I'm at the point that I'm just happy if the next story is as good as the ones that I've already read. And if that takes a little bit longer to get to, I would much rather do that than have a story that's rushed and isn't what you want and isn't what we want. So just know that when we're clamoring for more, it's just because we love it, but we don't want to add any pressure to you. Maybe a little pressure, but you know what I'm saying. Obviously, you did say, and I actually think I missed this, so you did say that there is another Murderbot on the way.
Yes.
It's nowhere near completion yet.
No, it is finished. Okay. I think it's going to, they haven't scheduled it yet, so I'm not sure when it's going to come out. The last I heard is they were thinking about going ahead and putting it out next year, even though Witch King is also right now scheduled for May, so it wouldn't be coming out then. But I tried to start it before Fugitive Telemetry, and I couldn't get anywhere on it, and I needed to write something. And so I just wrote a scene of Murderbot standing over a dead body, and that became Fugitive Telemetry. And, you know, as I was doing that scene, I realized, yeah, there's that scene in Network Effect. This would be a great opportunity to expand on that relationship that's mentioned in Network Effect with Murderbot and then Preservation Station Security. And then, so that was in 2019. And then at the beginning of 2020, I was trying to start on this novella that would take place after Network Effect, and the pandemic started and everything just went. Yeah. And I probably restarted this novella, you know, 20 times. And finally, by July, I'd realized I was completely blocked on it. And I was really getting back into fantasy at that point. And that's when I started Witch King and wrote it. I finished it in early 2021 and then started trying to get back into this novella and kind of plugging away on it. And when I finally really got back into it, I realized I'd written some bits amount of verbiage of Murderbot's personality is very easy to write. It doesn't mean that's good. That's going to be something that can end up in the final book, because it can talk about almost doing almost anything and I can write that, but it's like most of it might be unusable. And so I finally realized I actually had a good beginning, and I kind of finally figured out what was going on with Murderbot in the story, but I didn't finish it because one thing, having to revise Witch King and doing some other stuff, I didn't really finish it until July of this past summer. And it's twice the length. It's not really a novella. It's twice the length of a normal novella. And my sinking sensation as I hit 40,000 words, the story wasn't done, but it wasn't going to be long enough to be a novel, but it's done. And some people have actually read it and thought it was good. So I haven't heard back from my editor yet about what he thinks, but it's got a title. It's called System Collapse. Okay. And it was about, because of the deadlines that were set with the contract, I have a 6-book contract with Tor.com, and Witch King is the first book. And then this Murderbot novella is the second. And then there'll be two more, probably fantasies, and then two more Murderbot, either novel or novellas. So it was only like a month late after all that, after being started in 2019 and finished in 2022, it was only a month late. And it's got a cover sketch and everything. For a while there, it was hanging on. I felt like I'd just been working on it forever. So it was sort of a big shock to me to finish it and be going, oh my God, this actually pulled together and became a book. So I hope people like it. I think it's pretty good.
Well, I'd like to this point. Think too, something that is, at least is proven to me with Murderbot, that's not something I really would have thought of before, is, you know, you've gone with Network Effect, but you've also done like Exit Strategy, stuff like that. I feel like the fans for this one, they don't care. You know, it could be a novella, it can be a novel. As long as it's a story and it's a good story, we all seem to be all in. In fact, Murd said they just left to go reread Exit Strategy. I think they were kidding there, but... But I think this, just the character and the stuff that they find themselves in, it really lends itself that if you want to write a novel, great, but you can also write a novella for him, her, it, again. Sorry, I'm old. It's hard not to do pronouns. It. I know it's not a human, but yeah, you can pretty much put it in whatever situation you want. And I think, as you've proven, it doesn't matter how long it is. I haven't read a bad Murderbot story yet. So,
well, that's because I put a lot of effort into making them not bad. But yeah, it's I really feel like I have some freedom with this now to kind of, you know, the success of the past novellas and the novel have let me get to a point where I can write a weirdly, you know, 60,000 word novella, which is no longer a novella. It's a short novel. And that'll be fine, because that's the length of story needed to be.
Well, I think words like novel and novella mean a lot more to Tor and Simon & Schuster and Penguin Random House than they do to the reader, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think so too. But one of the things with, I Fugitive Telemetry was actually nominated for a Nebula Award, and I turned the nomination down because the series already had two, had won twice. And then it was nominated for a Hugo, and I turned it down because the series had already won four, basically. And those award categories, basically the length of the word count, whether it's something as a short story or a novelette or a novella, is morally more important to the award categories. So having decided that I'm not going to accept any more nominations for Murderbot stories kind of frees me from that too. So I don't have to worry about the fact that, you know, this is a novella, but it's too long, so it wouldn't be able to be in the novella category. It would be competing with novels, which is, I've seen some incredibly wonderful novellas that should have won or been, you know, been nominated for awards and probably missed out because their word count was a little high, which bumped them out of the novella category, and they're competing with full-size novels, and so they didn't get on the ballot, which is a great shame. But I don't have to worry about that anymore because I can just make it whatever length I want, since that's not going to be a consideration for me. I'll accept award nominations for my other work. Well, I certainly hope Witch King does well enough that it gets on a ballot or so, but I'm not going to accept any more for Murderbot.
Gotcha. Some people in that category probably appreciate knowing that.
It's like, well, it's really, hey, we have a chance to win. Yeah. Yeah, it was really nice for the Nebulas when I found out if I dropped out of my Nebula slot, three people would move into it because of the way they do, basically the way the Nebulas are nominated and select, and the ballot is figured out. There were three people in the slot under me, so all three of them moved up, and it was a 7 novella ballot, which was really, really cool. I was really jazzed about that.
Gotcha. And I just got to share this one because it's a very Murderbot thing to say. Murd mentioned that Extremely Angry Murderbot is second only to Extremely Worried About Mensa's Approval Murderbot.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, just it's so weird. It's a lovable character. It's one of those characters, like, I tease my wife. I don't know if you've ever seen the show House.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So my wife loves that character. I'm like, yeah, but if you had to live with an actual doctor acted that way, it's like, no, he's a jerk. It would drive me crazy. But as a character that you can live through vicariously, it's awesome. But yeah, it's like,
yeah, I was more like a Scrubs person.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah, well, my wife, unfortunately, she's also a nurse. So too many TV shows with doctors. I just get to sit on the couch listening to her yell, fake! So yeah, we tried to give Grey's Anatomy a try and a couple of the others. ER, to be honest, was the only one that she said they did some stuff that was wrong, but they were the closest to how things actually are.
Oh, that's interesting.
But now we're getting off topic. But if you're an ER fan out there, it is nurse approved. Okay, so obviously I will come back to Murderbot if anybody throws out any questions that they had. One thing I didn't want to touch on, and you talked about it briefly earlier, the fact that Salt Witch, for what is an extremely short story, took you so long to write. I have to say, and again, I think it's been out long enough that I'm not worried about doing too many spoilers here. I started reading that short story, and it is a very short story, with this whole, okay, this is like, you know, some sort of supernatural, you know, fantasy types, and it's a ghost story. Wait, what? It's like, so I love the fact that you managed to write that in such a way that I didn't see it coming, because my wife will tell you, she hates watching TV shows, like mystery shows, with me, because 20 minutes into the thing, I'm like, he did it or she did it. Yeah, I did not see Sea Witch turning into the story, Salt Witch turning into the story that it ended up being, and I loved it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, that one was really close to my heart because I based the setting on Galveston Island, which is one of my favorite places ever. And I drew a lot from that. And I got the idea for it when we were down there one night, and the wind had this really strange quality where it was just a little bit damp, but it was coming in really strong. And there'll be times out there where it's almost like a hurricane wind, even though you know there's nothing out there. It's just this kind of storm potential you feel in it, even though that you know it's not going to develop. And it was one of those nights, really wild night. And I came up with the idea. And then a year later, I finally finished it after I wrote a little bit that night. And then, yeah, and then came back to it over and over and over again. Because I couldn't get it to work at first. And I was like, I really love this idea and I want to keep working on it. So I was glad I stuck with it.
That's a warning to all the fans out there who read a short story like that and think it's like, wow, this must have just rolled off the tongue in a night. And like, no. Part of it rolled off the tongue in a night. The rest of it took a long time to find.
Yeah. It took me a long time to get the voice. It's like I knew the idea and I couldn't get the first sentence. That took a long time. Usually once I get the first sentence, I can get going. But even once I had that, it still took forever. So.
Gotcha. Tora brought up a good question. I like that one. I assume it's Tora. I don't think it's Torak. I could be wrong. But Tora K, you talked about how when Murderbot notices, you talk about in the books, when Murderbot notices that it makes mistakes. Did you write those mistakes in there, or did you realize it as you started to write in the moment? It's like, oh, it's a mistake. And then like, I know exactly what Murderbot would say in this situation.
It's a lot of the times it's like I've forgotten something when I'm writing. And so Murderbot will be making a mistake. And then I'll realize this is a really great mistake for Murderbot to make. Sometimes it doesn't work because sometimes it's just it's a Martha mistake and it has to go back and be fixed. But sometimes it's like, yeah, this is a mistake Murderbot can make in this situation, and it's a really natural way when you want your character to screw up, to kind of have it come out of a natural mistake as you were you dropped one of your setting elements for a little bit and didn't think about the full implications of that. So that's a good way to generate a character mistake. So a lot of them are. I tend not to plan out mistakes in advance because I think they're much more fun and they feel much more natural when they kind of develop organically as you're working out your plot logistics.
And I have to say, one of the things I think that you write really well, and I think it's hard, especially for new time writers to get, when you're writing a book, I think especially the dialogue, people write the dialogue that they wish they talked like. I know, for instance, having done this a few times, I'm going to rewatch this and edit it before I put it on YouTube and probably remove like 17 uhs that I didn't even notice I said. there's one right there. But the Murderbot, especially, I saw one of the, I can't remember the exact quote. I've read a lot of your books lately, but there's one where he's talking about something and then he's like, and then he just, it's almost like you can hear the pause in the book. It's like, yes, that's irrelevant. And then just moves on. And to be fair, though, that's a lot, I think, of the stuff we catch ourselves saying. And we'll say something and we're like, we actually think to ourselves, what does that got to do with anything? Why am I talking about this? And we just move on. But to actually put that in your book as part of the dialogue, I think it's something that not every author gets. They want to make everything perfect. And conversations, everyday conversations, aren't perfect. People use slang. People pause. People stumble over what they're trying to say. I won't get political, but I remember one, just because it was funny, there was a quote from George W. Bush one time when he was on something and they said, don't worry, we'll edit that out. He's like, edit? If I got to edit, I would have never misremembered anything. You know, it's like, and just be able to, you know, if you see yourself on video ever, you're going to make mistakes when talking. And I feel like Murderbot, just the dialogue is very natural and it's not necessarily that everybody talks in pristine full sentences and we get every piece of grammar correct and everything like that. And I think it's actually harder to write that in because it's just your natural thing is if I have the ability to edit, I'm going to make it perfect. But if it's perfect, it's not real.
Yeah, I obviously do not talk very perfect or pristine. My brain is screaming at me about 90% of the time and trying to play songs and going off on tangents where it wants to tell a story in part of my brain while the other part is trying to talk. So it's pretty easy for me to make that dialogue feel natural. So, yeah.
I get that. Anybody who works with me will tell you that 50% of my conversation is either movie quotes, song lyrics, or dad puns. So, you know, that's we don't always, you know, talk like we came from university. Tora also had another question to bring up, which I will edit for family friendliness. MB has a big, oh, crap moment at the start of Exit Strategy when it realizes it's interference pushed Grey Chris into action. Did you plan that plot point or was that also you realizing what you set up and then putting it in later.
I actually can't remember at this point if that was or not. If fairly early on like that, it was probably a plot point I came up with, because one of the things I do when, you know, I don't outline, but what I'll do is I'll come up with, you know, the beginning situation, where the character starts off. And then to get going, usually I have to know, it's like, this is point A, that's point B, that's point C. I might not know how we get there yet, but I'll know kind of vaguely that we're at point A and we're trying to get to point B, from where we'll get to point C. And usually by the time you get to point C, or I get to point C, I know D, E, and F and so forth. So that may have been something, because I can't remember how much of exit strategy I knew. I knew where I wanted it to end up, with Murderbot having to rescue Mensa and ending up probably going back to preservation. But and I knew where we were going to point A, because it was coming right off the end of Rogue Protocol. But I can't remember if I came up with that. It was probably a plot point, but it could have been something I came up with as I was, you know, writing that scene and thinking, oh yeah, this is definitely going to happen. But I think maybe I suspect it was probably a plot point, because it does figure into the whole thing, the whole plot. The center engine of the plot, which is Mensa has been kidnapped and Murderbot has to go find her. So I think I probably did come up with it in advance. I wrote Exit Strategy and Murderbot came out in 2017.
Yep.
And so I probably wrote it at the very beginning of 2018, or maybe a little bit further, because I was also working on some stuff, I think, then for Magic the Gathering. I was working on Murderbot, and then I'd finished Rogue Protocol, and then I needed to work on the Magic story through kind of the winter, and then I started Exit Strategy, I think. So I think that would have been in 2018. So that's like a whole set, 3 or 4 lifetimes ago in late 2000s period.
Let's face it, for a lot of us, we have good general knowledge of what happened until about 2020, and then like the last 2 years is just one big conglomeration of things.
Sometimes those periods were March lasts about 5 years, and then suddenly it's October kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. So we do have a question from a Whovian, it looks like. I'm curious if Murderbot has and this is Wanakeet. Again, I do apologize. I know nobody, I have a weird to pronounce user handle too. I'm curious if Murderbot has that longevity quality as the Doctor, and I'm assuming they said Who, so I'm assuming they're talking about Doctor Who, in terms of its view and the relationship to the humans, as they are so much more fragile than it.
Well, right now, you don't know how long constructs are designed to last.
That's true, because they do have some parts, humans, the brain, for instance.
Yeah, the neural tissue and everything. So I haven't approached that in the series yet. So, and Murderbot's not super old. It hasn't been around for like, you know, hundreds of years like the Doctor has. So,
yeah, I would like the ability to, you know, repair from some of those holes, though.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I find myself hurting myself doing stuff that used to be just stuff you didn't think about, like walking.
Sleeping in a bed, you can get hurt that way, too.
Yeah. I'm at the age where I roll out of bed slowly sometimes, just in case. anywho, so let's get on. I know it's coming down the pike, or the pipe, depending on what part of the country you're from. And Tor failed me. Just teasing, Tor. I did try to see if there was going to be an arc coming out of that early, so I could get a sneak peek. But they didn't think if there was one, they'd be out this early. How much, since it's still not coming out for months, how much are you okay talking about Witch King yet?
Yeah, it just kind of depends. I have a hard time describing my own work, so it will be very helpful on that point. It's a secondary world fantasy, which just means it's not on Earth. It's a completely new story, completely new characters and world. It's not related to anything else I've ever done. It's basically about the kind of rise and fall of empire, from the point of view of immortals who are very intimately connected to this world and these things that are happening to it. So it's kind of like a, well, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, it's basically about a fairly peaceful section of this world with all these different cultures living there. They've not really had any problems in the way of warfare, and they're just attacked almost out of nowhere by this other group they've never heard of before that comes in and is basically genociding their way across this continent. And that's one timeline in the book. And the other timeline is what's happened after that stopped. I'm making it sound crazy. It's a very,
no.
It's not that complicated, but it's basically, again, kind of an exploration of what happens after the happy ending in a lot of fantasy trilogies where you defeat the evil empire, but how do you put your world back together? Do these alliances stay together? What changes? What about the people who kind of sacrificed everything for this war and then they're still alive and they become politically important, but it's through the eyes of this, of these people that are very long lived. So they're watching the alliances and everything that they set up start to fall apart and crumble. But it's also a very personal story about the main character is trying to help his best friend find her wife who's been kidnapped. And that's the main through line of the book. I'm probably not doing a very good job of selling it. That's why authors don't write the descriptions.
It's totally fine. In fact, I was watching, I was actually at a live, surprisingly, there are still a few live author events. In fact, I know you've been doing a lot of cons lately, but here in Omaha, where Chloe Neal is actually local to Omaha, and her thing was she hated reading her own books. Sometimes they ask an author to read a book at a book, things like, I'll do anything but that. I mean, everybody's got their own stuff that they don't necessarily want to do. But I thought you did a great job. And I think I have to agree with the fact that if you look at fantasy novels, there's a huge chunk of them that are the whole post-apocalyptic stuff. And there's a huge chunk of them that probably are the, we're getting to the happy ending thing. But I think it's not as well explored, that situation about, this happened, we got to the happy ending. Then what? I feel like you see this in TVs and movies as well, where I think a lot of people don't go past the happy ending. We got to the happy ending. That's what we wanted. And I think it's also a Western world thing. I think you find a lot more Eastern civilizations do better with tragic stories, or, they don't have to have that happy wrap up ending, which was, I alluded to again earlier with Rain Man, as it hurt me as a Western. I wanted the happy ending, but that necessarily wasn't the right ending. So being able to go in and see the stuff that most authors don't normally touch on, I think is going to be interesting. And personally, as much as I love Murderbot, as a fantasy guy, I'm really interested in seeing what Witch King is going to come out as.
Well, cool. Well, good. I think I like to kind of, I've played with that before. Death of the Necromancer is basically, the main character is the kind of character who would be the bad guy in a lot of other books. Mm-hmm. In the books of the Raxura, very early on, it's a character that's been alone, has been orphaned, and doesn't know. It's in a world where there are no humans. It's a bunch of different other species. And he's not sure what his species is, where he comes from. And then he finds someone else who's like him, and they go to where his people live. And in a lot of books, that would be the ending. And in the books of the Raxura, it's the beginning, because that's just where his problems really begin. So I kind of like playing with things like that. And Witch King is kind of the similar way. It's the happy ending was happy, but that was a long time ago. And now we have to deal with this.
True. Most people don't get to end their lives on the happy ending all the time. It's like, after the happy ending, you still got some stuff to do.
I love books with happy endings. I'm just as reassured by that as everyone else. But and actually, a lot of my books still do happen. They do get to a different happy ending, but it's just a different phase of it, basically.
Gotcha. But we're not. It's not going to be a Disney movie, is what we're saying here, I think.
At this point, it's pretty violent.
All right. So I'm just going to ask, I've got one final question that I asked, but I'm just going to see if audience had anything else. We're a little bit past the hour point. which is not a hard stop for me, but I know you've got other things to do. So this is roughly where I try to wrap things up. If anybody else, I'll give you about 60 seconds. If anybody's got a question they want to type in the chat, we'll try to throw that in. Should have had the Jeopardy music ready. I was not prepared for that.
I can't do the Jeopardy music. I can do do, and that's about it.
But that's a big reason I love these things is the fact that we actually, you know, they get to interact and ask questions.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So Cass doesn't look like we have a question, but she just wanted you to know. I'm assuming it's a she. Again, some of these I have to. But again, usernames, it's not always easy to tell. I just wanted Martha to know my partner introduced me to Murderbots, and now we're getting married.
Well, that's good.
Not saying that one caused the other, but it helped.
Well, that's great. That's really nice to hear.
All right. So if somebody else, oh my goodness, I think I missed it, but somebody else had talked about the fact that I think rewatching or rereading your books or re-listening to the audiobooks of yours, I do apologize, and I can't remember where in the chat it was, had gotten them through the pandemic. They just keep re-listening to it over and over again.
Yeah, books and TV shows were really important to me, or still, you know, because we're still having the pandemic. But it's always been important to me, but it was super important during that year. I really needed that.
We're working like in a tridemic for next year. So like, we're just making up new words at this point.
Yeah.
I think the funniest thing I saw, and dark humor. So apologize for the fact that I'm using funny in exchange for a pandemic here. But I saw a card that somebody put together that said something along the lines that, you know, I was always wondered what it would be like to live during the Dust Bowl or the bubonic plague or the War of 1812 or something, but not all at once.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what 2020 gave us.
Yeah.
So apparently I'm going to have to listen to the audiobook because everybody keeps talking about not only the fact that your books are great, but Kevin's voice. So I have got to at least get one of the audiobooks. Plus it'll help me how to say the doctor's name. I can never say the doctor's name. The doctor.
Radwaj.
Thank you, that one. Again, I'm one of those people who probably sometimes, I do a lot of reading, so I know I've caught myself before saying words and I find out I say them incorrectly because I learned to say them while reading them, not actually hearing them.
Segway is a good one like that. It took me, like, I don't know how old I was, probably 30 before I figured out Segway. Segway was actually spelled versus what it looked like in my head.
Okay, I did, I'm talking to Cass here real quick. I did see the Wanig one about Doctor, but I don't know if there was something else that I missed. I do apologize. Oh, Soliferous, coming in late here to the game. Murderbot is my sanctuary moon. It brings me such joy. Thank you so much for writing.
Oh, thank you.
So that's a shout out to you. I had nothing to do with that one. And so let me bring up I think we're kind of slowing down here. Let me bring up the final question and let you have your night back to yourself. Everybody who watches this more than once knows that I always like to give a shout out to a brick and mortar or, especially if it's an indie bookstore that you like to give a shout out to. I don't have anything against Amazon. I'm on Twitch, which is owned by Amazon, and I've got a Kindle over there. But I do like to give the indie bookstores as much of my business as I possibly can. So who, if anybody, would you like people to take a stop at one of your favorite bookstores?
One of my favorites is Murder by the Book in Houston, Texas. It's mostly a mystery bookstore, but they also carry science fiction and fantasy, and they do a lot of author events. And during the pandemic, or again, we're still having the pandemic, but starting with the pandemic, what we would do is go there and they would do pre-order signings where people could order the books in advance while the store was still open, but they were during the worst of it before vaccination. It was basically people would order books online or call and order things, and they would make up the package and you would come pick it up out at the door basically. And so they did these pre-order signings, and I'd go there. It was just the staff in the store and sign all the books. And then they'd send them out. And that was really cool and made me still feel like I was like in touch with the rest of the book world when we all really felt so isolated except for being online. But yeah, they're a great store and they're a lot of fun to go to. And I think they've started their in-person events now again this past year. And I highly recommend them.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll mention I didn't have anybody else prepared today, so my go-to is always the Bookworm here down in Omaha. They also just started redoing their in-store live events. Chloe Neal, like I mentioned, was just there. William Kent Kruger, that's the one, was also just there. So.
Oh, and actually, I think Murder by the Book has an event with Mary Robinette Kowal this weekend.
Okay.
I think it's on Saturday. She's got a new book called The Spare Man that's a science fiction mystery.
Bit of a drive for me, but if anybody's listening from Texas, go ahead and check it out. Also, one last thing. I think I read that you just got back from Germany not too long ago, didn't you?
Yes, I did, in September. Okay. I had an absolutely wonderful time.
Well, if you enjoy traveling, Cass is putting in a little earworm there for you that you might want to visit Australia sometime. You've got plenty of fans.
Yeah, though I have to find a convention that will, or something that will pay for me to go.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, that's true. I can admit that's probably not something you want to do on your own dime if you can possibly avoid it.
Yeah, that was kind of expensive.
So it looks like Murd, Cass, and Tora there, we're going to be trying to get you guys to come up with some con there that wants to bring Martha down, and she'll stop by for some shrimp or something.
And I recommend ElsterCon in Germany, too. That's a great, it's a small convention. It's absolutely wonderful. A lot of they bring in some American and British authors, but they also have a lot of German authors, local German authors. They have it every 2 years. So,
yeah, I'm actually going to be staring some time at your events log later by kids. And I say kids, they're in their 20s now, but we were planning to go to San Diego Comic-Con because we've been putting it off with the whole, you know, pandemic thing going on. And we finally decided that maybe going back to Comic-Con for our first con and standing in line for 8 hours, because it's the biggest, you know, con around here, maybe we want to start with something smaller. So I've been looking at all the cons I'd never heard of before, checking some of those out. Definitely going to be taking a look through there, see if anything looks interesting. I don't know what it's about, but I am still enjoyed about the fact I saw one the other day. It's called Con Fusion, and I just love their name. I have no idea what's going on there. I'm going to have to look that one up, too. All right.
There's also ArmadilloCon in Austin is also a great one. I go to that one every year.
That's quite the name. I feel like that has some sort of meaning to them.
ArmadilloCon? Well, there's just a lot of armadillos here.
Right. But I'm figuring they've got to work that into the thing somehow, don't they? I mean, is the mascot a giant armadillo?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Well, it's not giant, but yeah. Sometimes it's giant. It's armadillo in a spacesuit a lot of the time.
It's not the Hanukkah armadillo, is it?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Sorry, it's only certain people of a certain age who watch Friends are going to get that reference. Like I said, everything's a movie quote or a TV quote. I do apologize. But yeah, there was one where he's Jewish and he was trying to get a costume and all the other costumes were gone. And so all they had left was an armadillo. So that's what he dressed up for his son for. He was the Hanukkah armadillo
Okay.
Yeah, you know, he worked with what he had. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and let us wrap it up real quick. I want to thank you again, Martha, for coming out for this. Well, coming out for this, for, you know, hopping on, taking that some time out of your night. Thank all the fans for jumping in, having some questions, so it's not just me talking, which I always appreciate. Nothing else new and exciting going on. Like I said, if you want to check out grifkin.com, as soon as I get somebody, you know, in pen, I will get that on there so you can see what's coming. Hit the follow button. That'll let you know what's going on. And lastly, I don't usually push for the whole, subscribe thing because I know it costs money. But if anybody here is an Amazon Prime member, you do get a free Twitch sub every month. And I won't say no to doing that because it helps pay for my book habit. So hopefully we'll get to see you again, Martha. Definitely looking forward to Witch King. Everybody keep it. You said it's coming out in March.
May.
May. I had one of those MA words. Got it. Coming out in May. Like I said, I was hoping to have started reading it by now, but I am definitely trying to get my hand on an arc of that as soon as it comes out. Thank you, everybody, for your time. This will be edited. I don't have Fridays off anymore from work, so normally I would say it would definitely be up tomorrow, but I can't guarantee that now. But we'll be edited. Anything you missed, I know they run ads on Twitch now. I do apologize for that, but I will get this up on YouTube so everybody can see what's going on. And that is it. Everybody, have a good one.
Thank you.